Well, it's May, but for May, there is some sort of football going on. Tennessee Titans have opened organized team activities, widely known as OTAs, which gets players together on the field for some practices that actually look like football to a certain degree. So months from the start of the season, it's we'll take it, I guess. It's an exciting time, chance to look at some of the injured players, how they're moving around, a chance to look at some of the rookies and how they fit in with the veterans. And Tennessee Titans, as they had an open practice this week where the media got a chance to look at that. We've heard from a number of players this week, and as usually is the case this time of year, a couple of notable names are not in attendance, which is allowed because these are voluntary workouts, and Mike Vrabel typically and characteristically this year does not make a big deal, at least not publicly, of players' absences. So we will get into these matters along with one notable NFL rule change on this episode of the Believe in Titans podcast, with the usual lineup led by former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, good day, sir.
Good day. How you doing, David?
Doing great. And John Glennon of the Nashville Post. John, how are you?
Good. Hope you all are as well.
Doing great. And I am David Beauclair. Again, this is the Believe in Titans podcast. And big news around the NFL this week is that the league owners have passed a rule to allow for an emergency third string quarterback again. I think everybody looks to the San Francisco 49ers playoff exit as sort of the obvious impetus for this. The last time the NFL had allowances for an emergency third string quarterback, I believe that ended with the 2010 season. The stipulations this year are that the player has to be on the 53-man roster. That means it can't be someone elevated to the game day roster from the practice squad. And the first two quarterbacks have to be ruled out by coaches and or medical personnel deemed unable to play, which is also a change from previously, where it was just noted that if the third quarterback gets in the game, the other two can't come back. Now it seems to me there's a little more wiggle room here in terms of determining these things. But Mike Vrabel has said his quarterback depth chart, at least coming out of the draft, he said it, the quarterback depth chart was Ryan Tannehill, Malik Willis, Will Levis. But Denard Walker, this is good news for Malik Willis, much more so than Will Levis, don't you think?
What, as far as the three quarterback rule?
Yes.
Not necessarily. If you're Malik Willis, you look at it as you don't look at it that way. I know that they went out and drafted Will Levis. I know there's a lot of optimism. I know there's a lot of excitement. But you have to understand, David, last year we was raving about this young man, right? We were talking about Malik Willis, especially at the combines. And and let's not forget that was your third rounder for last year. Let's not look at the three games that he started. Let's not look at the three interceptions or the zero touchdowns. Let's look at year two. And let's just see how he evolves, especially right now in minicamp.
John, do you think, I guess the next question is, do you think the Titans will keep three quarterbacks on the 53-man roster and give themselves that emergency third option on Sundays? Or can you see this team going with just two again and rolling the dice that way?
Yeah, I'm glad you laid out the rules there beforehand, Dave, because I think a lot of people just automatically interpret this as sort of like, oh, now there's an extra roster spot, almost like, oh, now there's 54 guys on the roster. No, not the case. It's still the same amount of guys, 53-man roster. In other words, if you're going to keep a third quarterback to use in emergency conditions, be on that roster in the first place. So, kind of pros if the Titans wanted to go in that direction. And again, as you referenced too, Well, I'm assuming that if Levis climbs above Malik Willis, a pro of keeping three quarterbacks would be you're allowing a guy like a guy who's, still a project in Malik Willis, you're allowing to him to have that second year to develop, even if he's not necessarily playing in games. If Tannehill was to go down and you're left with two guys there, you at least have Malik Willis, who's familiar with the system already, having a year under it, and who's got some experience as well. Another pro. What if Levis isn't a guy that's going to be the future? And if you cut Malik Willis, and you're left with Will Levis, and all of a sudden he doesn't pan out, and you're saying, wow, I wish we could have kept Malik Willis around. But at the same time, I think it's a guarantee, it's a lock that they keep three quarterbacks, because how often has it been a concern for Mike Vrabel and this team in games over the years? Not saying that it can't be at any given time, but it hasn't reared its head all that often, during his tenure here. So that the Titans might be left saying, oh, if we'd only, kept that third quarterback. And I guess, by the same, we know how valuable roster spots are to every coach, including Mike Vrabel. Is he willing to give up another position player for a third quarterback on that 53? I'm not so sure. Because remember, too, again, as you referenced in the rules, the only way this third quarterback can get in a game is if the first two guys are knocked out. So it's not like you could say, hey, let's keep Malik Willis around and use him as kind of like a gadget player, like a Cordell Stewart kind of guy in games from time to time. No, you can't do that. The only way the third guy gets in is if the other guys get knocked out one way or another. So pros and cons, I don't think it's a lock. I really don't, that the Titans would automatically keep three just because they can.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, as I've thought about this, if John Robinson was still the Titans GM, I would say the odds are slim that they would keep 53 quarterbacks on the 53-man roster. I mean, he made use of every roster spot there, and there's a scenario here where you can have a quarterback on your practice squad. Come Saturday, you can add him to the active roster if you think you're going to need him, make a move that way. And then Monday, send him right back to the practice squad based on whatever happened in the game. And that's how I would see John Robinson handling this. The important thing to keep in mind here is Rand Carthen comes to the Titans from the San Francisco 49ers, who ended up without a quarterback in the NFC Championship game. And he's probably is still feeling the sting of that a little bit right now. And I would think that, number one, makes him more likely to want to keep three quarterbacks and have that option available at all times. And the other side of this is, Denard, you said it. Malik Willis was a third round pick last year, a guy that the Titans traded up for, a guy some people thought was a first round talent last year. Will Levis was a second round pick this year, a guy that some thought might be a top 10 overall pick this year. If you're going to cut either one of those guys, there's no way they're going through waivers to and get to the practice squad. So if you're going to make this move, what you're do if you're going to go with just two on the active roster, what you're going to concede is you're going to lose one of these guys, and you're just going to find a veteran or somebody out there that you can add to the practice squad and go from there and have him be available for promotion and then service as a third quarterback if necessary. Do you think, Denard, that Ryan Tannehill's injury issues last year too, will that weigh into the thinking about this? Are the Titans going to be more inclined to consider keeping three based on the fact that Tannehill didn't show the durability that he did his first 3 years here?
Well, just look at last year and look at what happened. We all know that you're one play away from getting hurt, and that was the difference in this team moving on or going home the last game of the season. And who they end up going out and get, Josh Dobbs, and still look at your two backups. They're still a work in progress, and they have to learn a new system. We don't know what Will Levis was 2023. He still's got to try to catch up with Tim Kelly's playbook. So he's still a rookie. Not to mention, Malik is going into his second year. Go back in 2021 and look who the backup quarterback was for Tennessee, Logan Woodside. Just imagine last year if this team kept three quarterbacks. Then you at least you have a quarterback. Let's say you had a young Malik Willis and you have Logan Woodside, who had already been in the system in 5 years in Nashville, 2018, left, and then 2022. What did Logan Woodside have that Malik didn't? He had experience.
At least experience in the system.
And
he was here. Yeah. I mean, he was here on the practice squad for a while too, before Atlanta added him to the active roster.
Yeah, so I think this would be a huge benefit for Tennessee if you kept three quarterbacks, because you got two young guys that we don't know nothing. We know about Malik, but we know not Will Levis. We don't know how he is going to grasp Tim Kelly playbook. So it would be feasible for this organization to keep these players, because we know we got a 35-year-old quarterback next year. Durability has been an issue. And listen, you got two players that need the work. I think it would be feasible just to keep three quarterbacks, just for safety reasons, because at least with Malik, even if he's beat out, at least you know he has experience in the system.
Can three quarterbacks get enough practice time during the regular season, though?
Yes. I mean, you can make it work. I mean, what you do is, we know that the backup quarterback doesn't get that many reps during the season. So it depends on the coach. I mean, are you willing to work with three quarterbacks? Are you willing to split the reps between the practice squad? Say you have the practice squad quarterback and then your backup quarterback. I mean, is that something that Mike Vrabel is willing to take on?
But yeah, I mean, I guess that would be the question, especially, I mean, it's not like one of these three, if it's these three that they have right now, it's not like one of them's Matt Barkley, who's been in the league forever and has been around. I mean, Levis and Willis will need practice time and to some degree, and that'll be part of the challenge, I guess, for Mike Vrabel and Tim Kelly to figure out how to do all of that. John, I'll ask you this. Malik Willis was a topic of conversation this week at OTAs. Mike Vrabel said they challenged him a little bit this offseason to do some things differently. And I guess predictably that, you know, they're painting a positive picture of all that. But what, you know, run through it for us. What are they looking for from Malik Willis? What do they say they're seeing from him right now?
I thought it was interesting, because when Mike Vrabel was asked, you know, what he would like to see Malik Willis continue to work on during this offseason, you know, he didn't necessarily hear the answers that maybe we heard more last year in terms of the on field. He wasn't talking about, you know, being less hesitant in the pocket or you know, improving his efficiency, that kind of thing. To me, the words that stood out, and he talked for a little bit about various things, but the ones that stood out to me were kind of like, we'd like to see a better presence from him, kind of a better demeanor, you know, more of a leadership type of presence is kind of the, and I'm probably not quoting it exactly, but that's the sense that I got anyway. And he said, you know, Mike Vrabel said there's only 32 guys who are starting quarterbacks in the NFL. So, you know, it's expected that you sort of carry yourself in a certain way, you know, that you're a leader, that you're a guy that everybody looks up to. And I don't think he was, you know, throwing any shade at Malik. I don't think he thinks he's trying to say he was a bad guy at all. But I just think that he wants a little bit more. You know, Malik comes across as kind of a laid back guy. You know, whether that's true or not, you know, I don't really know for sure, but that's sort of the nature of his personality. You know, and I went back because the one thing that stuck out to me after the second, his final start last year, the second time they played Houston, close game, they lost right near the end. He threw two interceptions on each of the last two drives. And Malik Willis, after the game, you know, was kind of talked about, or, you know, was asked about sort of his level of frustration or disappointment. And his quote, I went back and checked this. He said, it's football. You woke up this morning. I woke up this morning. So I'm just as happy as I would have been if we would have won, you know? Yeah, it's unfortunate and it sucks that we lost, but we'll have an opportunity to wake up tomorrow and learn from it and get better. We still have everything we want in front of us. And he sort of continued. He said, "You can be a Debbie Downer about it. That's your perspective, but we're blessed. We still got everything we could want, and we have an opportunity to learn from something that might be even better than going out there and doing what we wanted to do, wanted to today." And that quote kind of stuck with me. I don't think Mike Vrabel was ever asked about it per se last year, but it was also the last time that we saw Malik Willis start or play, during that during the season there. And that kind of struck me as like maybe what Mike Vrabel was referencing here this week when he talked about presence, demeanor, et cetera. Maybe you want to have that, or maybe Mike Vrabel wants more of the attitude of I don't know whether it's anger, disappointment, resolve, culpability, something that comes across a little stronger than, hey, it's all good. Whether we win or lose, we can always work on it going ahead. Maybe again, maybe that's what Mike Vrabel was referencing here. Maybe he wants teammates to see what the quarterback is saying or doing and say that, okay, I want to follow that guy's attitude. I want to be just like him. And maybe that's kind of what Mike Vrabel is referencing in that situation when he talks about things like presence, demeanor, and leadership.
Yeah, I believe I said it on one of these episodes late last season that you give Malik Willis credit because he didn't make excuses for poor play. He acknowledged that he had to get better, but you never got a sense of urgency from him that I got to get this fixed right now. I have to do more for this team and whatnot. And if that was the what was imparted to him that hey, this your time goes very quickly in this league. This is not one of those things where it's just gonna happen for you one day. You gotta get there and you gotta get there quickly. I think that was probably a good thing. Denard, though, how hard is it for Malik Willis right now, given what happened to him last year, given that this team turned to a guy fresh off the street and Josh Dobbs ahead of him at the end of the season. I mean, absent playing well in games again, I mean, how hard is it for Malik Willis to establish a big presence right now on this team, do you think?
It's not hard. It's called a sense of urgency, David. Listen, in this league, when you are a rookie, I don't believe that you're giving a pass, but what you have to understand is that that's a first-year player. So this, and I want to go back, and I did a little research, and I went back to some of my favorite players, and I love Drew Bledsoe. What was the number one pick in 1993 for New England, right? For the
Correct.
Patriots. Correct. But a great player, had a chance to play against him, had the strongest arm I've ever seen in my life. But his rookie year, he struggled in New England. He had a 49% completion percentage, 15 touchdowns and 15 interceptions, David. What about Terry Bradshaw? What do you love Terry Bradshaw? I think he's one of the greatest quarterbacks to play the game. Won 4 Super Bowl for the Steelers. You know what his rookie year he did down in Pittsburgh in 1970?
He was
Not
terrible.
good.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Terrible. Terrible is an understatement. He was 0-5-1 as a starter. 0-5-1. Chuck Noll didn't even want to look at him. And not to mention my favorite player, one of the greatest people I've ever had a chance to meet in my life, Randall Cunningham. David, you know this. Was Randall Cunningham in 1985? Was he the magic man that was creating? Was he just lighting it up down in Philly? I know he was there, David. Go ahead and say
He
it.
was not.
Say
No.
it, David.
He was not. No, he was there. In fact, there were people giving up on him right away that first year, saying it was a blown draft pick.
A blown drop. And what was it? 1-8. It was one touchdown, 8 interceptions, and 1-3 as a starter.
Yeah.
And
And I
so.
mean, and he looked look and to yeah to me Cunningham's a good example. Like Bledsoe at least was playing and gaining experience. You've talked about Peyton Manning and the huge interception totals Manning had his rookie year, but he was playing. Troy Aikman in Dallas, you can look, was terrible, but he was
He won
playing and gaining
11.
experience. Willis wasn't getting a lot of game experience last year, but Randall Cunningham, to your point, just a handful of starts and a guy who looked really really raw, and he was athletic, but there was questions, can he play the position at the NFL level? And certainly he got there and did some pretty spectacular things over the course of his career eventually.
And that's what we got to. Let's not forget, he's just coming into his second year. And I love what Malik said. And he says, I'm not changing my approach in 2023 just because this team has went out and got Will Levis in the second round. I'm not changing the thing. And a lot of the reports that I've read from Tennessee is that he's more decisive this year in camp. And he has something that he was lacking last year. And that's called confidence. And in this league, if you don't have confidence, David, when you step on that field, it's hard to be successful. This is a young man. Let's not forget, David, listen, when he started out at Auburn, let's not forget, look at his numbers. Do you think he had some great numbers those first 2 years at Auburn?
No, he didn't. He didn't. And that's why he didn't. That's why he needed to go elsewhere to play, because he wasn't going to play there.
David, he was 11 of 14. He had 69 yards passing. I wanted to give him one more yard to make it look better at 70. 69 yards. He goes to Liberty, and what does he do? He ends up throwing for over 5,000 yards in 2 years at Liberty. What happens? He got better, and that's what Malik meant when he says, listen, I'm not changing a thing. There's something that has gotten you there at that position where you're at today. Don't deviate from that. Just continue to work. And I think you're going to see a better Malik Willis in 2023.
But you can argue that in going from Auburn to Liberty, the talent he faced on a week-to-week basis was significantly less. There's no dip in talent anywhere in the NFL coming. I mean, he has to raise his game, plain and simple.
All players, regardless of where you go, you got to raise your game because now you're at a new level. David, I knew you was going to say that. The spirit of David Hudson jumped right into you. Couldn't even give the man any confidence, that gum you writers. But I think, I love his approach. And he also said this, and this is how you know that he's maturing as a player and he's getting, that's what happens when you start evolving as a player. He says, listen, I can only focus on what I can control. I know you know why Eli Manning, he took a pounding from the media for so long? Because he had that surfer guy. Well, I know this is in New York, but I can only control what I can control. That's why people didn't like Eli. That's his demeanor. Why change it? Why change who you are?
No, I agree. I agree with that. I agree with that. John, you were out there. Did you see, did Malik Willis look more confident, more decisive to you in particular? What did you see when you watched him?
I thought all three quarterbacks looked pretty good, to be honest with you. I didn't see a whole lot of hiccups out there. I thought there was an awful lot of accuracy. I thought the maybe the two maybe the two worst balls that I saw actually were from the other guys, Tannehill and Levis, in terms of trying to complete a couple deep passes that were not really close. But I thought Malik, looked sharp. Again, these are, for the most part, it's obviously non-contact drills and some of it's 7-on-7, et cetera. But I think he was good. And Chig Okonkwo, one of the guys who spoke for the Titans afterwards and liked Malik Willis his second year, same draft class. And he was asked if he noticed any changes in Malik. And he said, he thought, what he has seen so far and a small, limited amount of workouts, more accuracy, better decision-making, and also, more efficiency getting out of the huddle, getting everyone settled at the line. So those are three positive developments, from a guy who saw everything in Malik Willis last year. So, again, it's sort of like, as I mentioned earlier, it's another case for, potentially keeping three quarterbacks this year is that, again, if it ends up being Tannehill and Levis 1 and 2, we don't know that for sure. But if it is, you still have that third option, Malik Willis, as a guy who's a project, who still you don't have to give up on him after 1 year. You can still develop him, through that second year as well.
Let's say this too: none of those three quarterbacks were throwing against a secondary that included the Titans' best safety, Kevin Byard, or their best cornerback, Christian Fulton. Those two were notably absent this week, or at least when the media were out there. Byard is sort of the one that really caught a lot of people's attention because of the contract issue and the perception that maybe it involves some bad feelings. John, I'll come back to you first. What do you make of those two guys' absences? Fulton's a guy that Mike Vrabel called out in terms of his injury history at the end of last season. So, both those guys have reasons to have had their feathers ruffled. Is that what's going on here, do we think?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. It's not completely unusual for a team to ask a player, a veteran player, to take a pay cut. But at the same time, when that player, a guy like Kevin Byard, one of your stud players, one of your great, leaders, whether it's on the field or off, whether, it's a guy who's done everything this franchise has asked of him. And it certainly appears that he was understandably disappointed and frustrated when he was asked to take a pay cut. That said, the fact that he has not shown up for OTAs, I think everyone is still going to bat for Kevin Byard. I think, Mike Vrabel said, "Oh yeah, hey, I saw Kevin at the golf course the other day. We had a good chat. Everything's good. I got no worries about him coming in." Shane Bowen, was very similar. Said, "I have no doubt when Kevin Byard comes in, he's gonna be, on top of things." He mentioned the fact that he is talking with Scott Booker, in terms of, installing various things. So he's staying on top of things that way. And Jeffrey Simmons, his teammate, said the same thing. So no one, is in the least giving Kevin Byard a hard time or disrespecting him in any way for not being there. I think everyone knows that, when the time comes, when it's a mandatory minicamp, probably I think we'll see Kevin Byard. On the other hand, Christian Fulton, I get the sense it's a different story entirely. And as you said, David, I think this started probably when Mike Vrabel, called out basically Christian Fulton and David Long for kind of their history of soft tissue injuries, and really made it sound as if they played a significant role themselves in the injuries occurring. And understandably, I would guess, the players, and in this instance, particularly Christian Fulton, probably not too happy about it. So we do get reports that he is working out. I think Teron Davenport reported that he's working out, has his own personal trainer and so forth in Florida. But at the same time, if you're a reader of body language or quality of responses when Mike Vrabel was asked, "Hey, where's Christian Fulton? Is he here with you guys at all this week?" It was a one-word answer from Mike Vrabel: "Nope." So instead of going to bat for him and saying, "I got no worries about Christian Fulton, he's going to be fine, he's going to be great," it was just like, "Nope, this is a guy that clearly needs to be here, should be here, and isn't here." Now maybe Mike Vrabel can blame himself for that, for singling Christian Fulton out last year, but I don't think it's not a good situation moving forward, Christian Fulton, as he goes into a contract year.
And let's reiterate, these workouts are voluntary. There's players miss these things all across the league. It happens. Some miss just a day or two. Some skip the whole thing. Kevin Byard has missed time in OTAs before, and that certainly I would agree. There's no reason to worry about him. But Denard, Christian Fulton, I don't think anybody doubts is working out hard. He's a proven pro at this point. But when your coach called you out, should you, is it a good idea maybe to skip this, or maybe do you swallow your pride, show up and sort of try and calm the waters a little bit?
For what? You're not getting paid for it.
There
It's
you go.
voluntary. That doesn't mean you're not working. I mean,
Spoken
again,
like an LSU cornerback right there.
well, that's why they call it voluntary. I didn't see Eddie George around doing voluntary camp. I didn't see Samari Roll. I didn't see Eddie Robinson. And none of the, you know what? It's, listen, when you are a pro, coach is going to treat you like a pro. That's the way Jeff Fisher used to say. I love Coach Fisher. He had a rule, and he would say in the offseason, "You can do whatever it is you want to do. You can go work wherever you want to work as long as you work. And when it's time for like OTAs, when I want you guys to be here, that's mandatory, then I expect you to be here," and players were there. But for as like voluntary mini camps and things like that, No, you don't have to be there because you're not getting paid for it. So if players was like, listen, if I'm not getting compensated, I can still go get work done in Florida, like Christian Fulton. I can still do my own thing and get ready. But I don't think just because a coach calls you out that you need to be there. Christian knows what it is to be a pro, and I'm sure Mike Vrabel is going to hold him up to those standards.
And it'll be interesting to see when Fulton does arrive and talk. You know, I guess it's a possibility that he says, look, I found a trainer and discussed things, and everything is about keeping, avoiding soft tissue injuries. That was my whole approach this off season, which that'll be interesting if he shows up and says that. But
He probably said it's the LSU thing.
It well, it is DBU, right? I mean, the
That's
guy
right.
there's no question that the guy knows how to play the game. I guess we can say that. But all of that is our issues, I guess, for another time. And this is going to wrap up this episode of Believe in Titans podcast. So until the next one, John Glennon, thanks as always.
Okay, thank you guys.
And Denard, thank you, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate it, David.
Yep, again, I am David Beauclair. This is the Believe in Titans podcast.